This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Nerds! Today's episode is sponsored by Smart Travel, a new podcast from NerdWallet. Want to travel like a savvy jet setter? No, that doesn't mean monogramming your passport. It means making smart decisions every step of your trip, which means knowing your options. Smart Travel unpacks the facts, like which booking sites actually save money, how to fly first class using points, and if that fancy travel card is a smart investment, all so you can save more on your next adventure. Follow Smart Travel from NerdWallet today and start traveling like a pro.
Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yeah.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient. Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
Margaret, it is impossible to have an economic deal without a peace deal. The sine qua non for an economic deal is that Ukrainian leadership wants a peace deal.
I thought this was a building block towards getting to
a peace deal. Well, it was supposed to be, but President Zelensky came into the Oval on Friday. There were three things that were going to be done. There was going to be a press conference. There was going to be a private lunch with 16 of us. And as you can see from Dan Scavino's post on his X account, we were already set up to sign to sign the deal. So it's unclear now. President Zelensky has thrown off the sequencing. And Margaret, let me tell you the most tragic part of this. Mm-hmm. The President Trump's idea for this economic arrangement was to further intertwine the American people and the Ukrainian people and show no daylight, show the Russian leadership that there was no daylight. And President Zelensky came into the Oval Office and tried to relitigate in front of the world the deal. And the place to have done it would have been in the private lunch.
So there you have the Treasury Secretary Bessent on Face the Nation, CBS Face the Nation. And they're talking about that confrontation. What would you call it? What's the word you would use for when I was putting together today's YouTube poll? Who won in the Trump Zelensky Oval Office confrontation? At first, I had dust up and I thought that's not big enough.
Confrontation's good. Spat? Mm. No?
It sounds like tea should be involved in spat. It should be over hot tea.
Oh, yeah. Like they're just getting a little prickly with each other.
Doesn't spat sound like just a super passive-aggressive nose-in-the-air comment? That wasn't on those.
Yeah. No, it wasn't that either. How about brawl?
Maybe.
Closer?
Brawl more than spat. Confrontation.
I kind of went back to dust up there for a second.
It sounds good. But it's not.
It's a good writer term.
Yes.
But I don't know that that described it either.
So, it's not big enough.
So, confrontation.
Change of heart.
No. I don't even know.
Disagreement.
Who won in the Trump-Zelensky Oval Office confrontation? The YouTube poll is Trump-Zelensky, Russia, or no one. No one won. Annie Fry YouTube channel, come vote. When I saw that taking place, and it was the 11 a.m. hour, when that was going down, I thought this is huge. We have to run this without interruption. We have to present this to our listeners who might not have been able to hear it, or they're on their lunch at noon in the noon hour. Thank you for those of you who take us to lunch with you every day. We love it. Thank you for always paying the bill as well. We aired the whole thing, and then as the course of the show rolled on Friday, we were all sitting on the edge of our seats like, is he going to come back? At some point, there was a report out there that was like Rubio and Waltz told Zelensky he has to leave the White House grounds. That makes me think of what I tell my, you know, small child, like, you have to go to your room and you are allowed to come back when you're ready to apologize and move on from this. Which in my mind as a parent, and they're not listening right now because they're in school, so I can say this, just go up to your room and come down and say sorry.
Yeah. You know what it reminded me of? the drunk guy at the bar who gets thrown out because he hasn't paid his tab in a while.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, hey, you come here a lot. You are a regular patron, but you need to pay your bill. And if until you do, you're going to get thrown out.
Maybe don't let him back into the bar.
Yeah.
Well, the show moved on. You know, we get off here at 3. And Zelensky didn't come back. And it kind of started to evolve into this. Yeah, this was really bad. That was kind of the MO of the show. And then I thought to myself, well, gosh, I hope in my mind, just because I'd like to tie it up with a bow and move on, I was hoping it would be resolved by today. Like before the news cycle starts to really hit on Monday, you know, you can have the Sunday shows do their Sunday show thing, report on the dust up, confrontation, spat, brawl. And then on Monday morning, ooh, big news. But Zelensky doesn't seem to be interested in any sort of, you know, Trump says straight up he wants an apology. Trump wants a public apology. And if he would get the public apology, I think they'd be right back to where they started. I think that would be enough political recompense for what took place that he would, at the end of that, be like, okay, you said you're sorry. Now let's get back. Because at that point, he would have put Zelensky in his place. I don't know that is going to materialize out of this. And I'm really like asking myself several times over the weekend, I just peek in to see, especially if I had a Fox News alert, like, oh, did something happen? No, this is a stupid Oscars headline or something. Oh, crap. I wasn't going to mention the Oscars.
Too late.
12:12 and I did it already. That might be it. I don't know anything other than Kieran Culkin. We'll get to that.
Let's do the rest of the hour on the Oscars, but not this segment.
Okay, take it from here.
Not this segment.
I got nothing.
Okay.
We only have Ryan Schmelz and Eric Schmidt on this hour.
They might get bumped for Oscars talk.
No.
No?
No. Here's what we're going to do. Ryan, you're going to go in that room right there on the other side of the glass. Just lay it all out on a track.
Pretend I'm on air.
No, just go record it. We'll keep it in case we need it.
Okay.
If I go down in the show, like in the 2 o'clock hour, and I'm not here and I can't, you could just play it. You'll be in the can, so to speak.
I would probably just do it live.
You have to do something else. It doesn't seem to me like we've progressed back to the middle, to the calm place over the weekend.
No,
me either. We are kind of where it left off on Friday.
In fact, that was my big takeaway this weekend, too, was that things have changed. And I don't know that they've changed for the worse because we don't know what the outcome is yet. We're still in the middle of this thing. So how it ends will determine how this is perceived as well. But this is a moment now where it seems like the whole world is asking the question, what do we want out of this? You know, it seemed like we were kind of on a track and now that track has been stopped. So everybody in the entire world is asking, where are we going next?
Did you see how there are European countries who are like, we'll send aid, we'll send help, we'll do this?
Right? Right?
Let me think about this for a second. Finally? To the extent that are they able to compensate for what the United States was giving? Because if so, your neighbor right there in Ukraine, Europe, if you want to step up now, are we opposed to that? Does the United States want to be big man on campus all of the time? Whether or not they're directly involved with a country, I think that the key part of this is the corruption that exists in Ukraine. The amount of money that they've taken from the United States and the fact that we don't know where the money is, not a lot of it. And Zelensky's like, we'll find the money. It's like, what do you mean you'll go find it? You should be able to say, here's the ledger. Thank you. Here, line 1 through 30. Thank you. Like Steve Martin on Saturday Night Live. You know. You know?
Oh, I know.
Okay. Yeah. That's not what was happening. And Zelensky's continued response is just a little... To me, it's like if he wants peace, it's there to... There's a huge step to take here. And then you have the protection of the United States. Do you want the United States to be present in your country with this minerals deal? You acted like you did. You came all the way here to sign the deal and then you didn't. Do you want that? Because that's how you get towards peace. Your actions don't seem to mirror a desire to achieve peace. And if you're going to, you know, pound your fist on the table and just say Russia needs to stop, how long are you willing to do that before Russia doesn't stop and you've got nothing left? Donald Trump has said that in the campaign. He's also said that repeatedly since he's been the president, that there are so many people dying and it needs to stop. The dying needs to stop. And it's going to take concessions on the part of Ukraine that it just doesn't really feel like Zelensky is interested in providing. You can be righteous in the sense that Russia invaded Ukraine. You can look at Vladimir Putin and think he's a psychopathic dictator, and also criticize what Zelensky is doing in Ukraine and say this doesn't feel like it's completely above board. And what is the American interest? We do not have an excess amount of money that we are looking to, you know, make rain across the world to better the circumstances of our global neighbors. We don't have that money. It's not like the money is there and we're saying we're not going to give it to Ukraine. We're going to give it to Zimbabwe. That's not what we're saying. We don't have the money. People in the Carolinas who were hit by this hurricane, they got $750 freaking dollars to recover from a natural disaster. They got $750 of American federal tax dollars to help get them through what? What do you get through from with $750 when you've lost everything? The goodwill that the Democrats politically are trying to gain right now is once again on the American taxpayer dollar of our great-great-grandchildren. They care more about Ukraine as a cause than they care about their own American constituents. And Donald Trump is unafraid to point that out and to stand for, in that meeting, to stand for the American taxpayer, the American on the coastal line that's suffering from hurricane damage, the American that's on the coastal line that's suffering from fire damage. The Americans, we're supposed to get bad weather across the country this week. Tornadoes are coming back their way. It's March. That's what happens. Are those people going to need federal aid? Quite possibly. There's no money for those people either. I'm listing all these people who deserve federal aid. There's no money for them. The money doesn't exist. We've already spent that money. We spent that money years ago. And Donald Trump is in a position where he can actually start to turn the ship. That ship does not turn quickly. But it doesn't turn at all if you're not willing to stand by it. And Donald Trump has been willing. A lot of people are criticizing Trump. There are a couple of times where I thought to myself, Is it possible that America steps back from being the big man on campus here to the detriment of America? And the truth is, if you've ever seen, I'm always relating things to like children and their relationships because it just feels applicable. Have you ever seen the cool kid in school who is cool because he's wealthy and he does all of the, like he's got to give and give and give and give and give and give and give, and people want to be around him because they get stuff, not because they're not even taking the time to get to know the kid. Should they get to know the kid, there'd be a different relationship here. The relationship that exists between the United States and a lot of these other countries is give or taker. The least that could be provided here is some gratitude. And that doesn't seem to be the number one priority here. And I think this is, I'm interested in listening to this. I haven't heard this clip before, but this is a flashback, an NBC report to 2022. And of course, Joe Biden being the president in 2022, NBC was reporting on the relationship between Joe Biden and Zelensky. Listen to this.
Yeah, that's right, Kate. So in this conversation, President Biden called President Zelensky to tell him about a roughly $1 billion package of additional equipment and weapons for the Ukrainian military coming from the United States. During the course of the call, President Zelensky continued, according to a number of officials who we spoke with who are familiar with the call, President Zelensky continued to talk about the additional equipment and weapons and support that he and his military needed. According to these officials, they said that President Biden finally just got frustrated and lost his temper and told President Zelensky, look, you could be a little bit more grateful. The reason that this story is interesting to us and is something that we are reporting on and officials are speaking to us about is because it shows that all these months ago, President Biden already realized that there was going to be a point where the American people, members of Congress, where people would start potentially pushing back on all these billions and billions of dollars of aid and equipment that the U.S. has been providing to Ukraine. And he knew that the narrative out there needed to be that the Ukrainian people and President Zelensky were grateful for it if this was the support.
When Joe Biden pushes back and says, you know, you could be more grateful in 2022, in 2022. When this is like a super hot and heavy new thing, when Joe Biden pushes back on Zelensky, at least according to NBC News, you know what that means? He's advocating for the American people, and the American people are going to want to feel as though this is something that is appreciated. It is their taxpayer dollar, and if it doesn't look like Zelensky and Ukraine are grateful for the sacrifice that is being made to benefit the aid of the Ukrainian people, this could turn. And he got mad on a phone call and called Zelensky out in 2022. And to me, it looks like NBC is reporting on that like Joe Biden had the Americans' back. And that was behind closed doors on a phone call that was able to be reported on. Not that type of behavior sitting in the Oval Office in front of the American press. Zelensky had an agenda that day. And, you know, the question I'm asking myself is, did he nail it or did he botch it? I'm not 100% sure yet.
Yeah, if that's been Zelensky's attitude since 2022, then what it says is that Zelensky's been playing the media and everybody for a long time and getting exactly what he wants.
What do we say about Donald Trump all the time? He's a showman. He's an entertainment guy. He's a TV guy. I don't really understand a lot about Zelensky's pre-president of Ukraine life. I just see the videos on X and I don't click on them or watch them or listen to them because they make me uncomfortable.
Yeah, I don't like watching Eastern European dance.
There's a lot of dance.
Just in general.
And weird stuff. But what it does tell me is he does know entertainment. He does know showmanship. And if he's trying to use the United States as a play here, I just don't know, because the end game doesn't seem like peace. The end game doesn't seem like send us more money, send us more weapons. The end game here, for Zelensky, at this point in my head, in my mind, while I'm scratching my head, is do you just want this to go on forever?
Yeah, it seems like everybody in the Western world, United States included, wants the United States to be involved in this war deeper and deeper and deeper, other than Donald Trump. And they're pushing and pushing.
And Trump's voters.
And Trump's voters. And they're pushing so hard to try to make us feel like something's on the line for us. When it's really hard, Zelensky did it in that meeting.
I want to talk a little bit about this. When we speak with Eric Schmidt at 12:45, are we speaking with him about this? Can we talk to him about this?
They did not give us a topic to talk about.
But they reached out to us?
Yes.
Well, then we're talking about it. That's going to happen, Senator Eric Schmidt. I really want to know who gains from this war continuing? And why is it the American people who voted Donald Trump into office? What could Donald Trump have done there that would have been different, that would have advocated better for the American interest? Because I don't see what it is. Does Zelensky want war? Does he need this? Is it a money-making machine? I have tons of questions, and we're excited to have Senator Eric Schmidt on, bumping Wiggins America to 145. But we asked Ryan, and he thought about it, and he thought this is what's best for the country.
Yeah, I mean we had a long pre-show meeting, and I came out kind of on the bottom there, didn't I?
I thought it was very upstanding of you to make that choice.
Well, you're welcome. I did. You're right. I said, what's the best for the country, Annie? And you said it's that we talked to Eric Schmidt at 12:45. And I couldn't disagree with that.
Also, I saw that one of the Wiggins America stories is about how you can now have virtual flavor shot into your mouth.
Yeah, that is one of them. So if you're concerned that you can't taste your TV, you're going to want to come back at 1:45.
Oh yeah, not 12:45.
12:45 today.
Because Senator Eric Schmidt is with us. And Ryan Schmelz, Fox News Radio, Capitol Hill, and White House correspondent, next on The Annie Fry Show. Go vote in the YouTube live chat poll. Who won in the Trump-Zelensky Oval Office confrontation? Trump, Zelensky, Russia, or no one won? Annie Fry YouTube channel, go vote. We'd love to see you there. We'll be right back. The more I learn,
the less I know. You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you. From daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
I'm Jordan Robinson, host of the new podcast, The Women's Hoop Show. Each episode, I'll be joined by a rotating group of women's basketball experts to talk WNBA, college hoops, the new Unrivaled League, and the shifting landscape of the sport. The game is growing, and so are we. Listen to and follow The Women's Hoop Show and Odyssey Podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
We want to balance a budget. We want to have a balanced budget within a reasonably short period of time, meaning maybe by next year or the year after, but maybe even sooner than that.
So President Trump speaking at the cabinet meeting there about wanting a balanced budget. There are a few things that are going to have to happen before that takes place. And one of those very first steps was we needed something that the Senate and the House could pass, could agree on to get it to the president's desk about the budget that we're talking about right now, the tax cuts that we're talking about right now, the funding for the southern border protections that he campaigned on. Lots to talk about, which is why we bring our expert friend in. Ryan Schmelz back with us, Fox News Radio, Capitol Hill, and White House correspondent. We welcome back to the show, Ryan Schmelz. Ryan, thanks for being here today. It's good to have you.
Of course. Happy Monday.
Happy Monday. We'll take it. It's not too bad here in St. Louis. Can you kind of set the table for us? We've talked about what the Senate has been able to do successfully, maybe even kind of bring us up to speed with that, and then add in what the House was able to do as well.
So the Senate and the House both passed their own bills. The House version has about $350 billion for border and national security. You also have $4.5 trillion in tax cuts and $2 trillion in spending cuts, plus an increase in the debt ceiling. However, the Senate version has the national security and the border security part of it, but they have not come to their agreement on tax cuts. So it looks like the big holdup right now is seeing if both of these sides can come to some type of agreement on raising the debt ceiling in tax law, as well as the spending cuts that they're working on, too.
Okay, so Ryan, just bring it back to like Schoolhouse Rock days for us. You've got a Senate bill and you've got a House bill. They both passed it. I'm guessing that the two, like the other House chamber, could pass the other one's bill and then it would go to the president's desk. It's probably not going to be that simple, I suspect.
Mm-hmm.
What happens now?
Yeah, I mean, the House would tell you the easiest thing to do would be if just the Senate passes their bill, then they could just move on to the next phase. But, you know, there's, I think, some disagreement, some pushback on the Senate side where they would like to see the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act of 2017 become permanent. But the House Republicans, at least some of them, some of the more conservative members are saying, that's fine, we can make the tax cuts permanent, but if you want to do that, you have to give us a way to pay for it. And that's kind of been the big holdup this entire time was, if we're going to go ahead and cut taxes, especially $4.5 trillion, we need to have spending cuts to offset those provisions. So that's where you get the $2 trillion in spending cuts there.
So, you know, I, especially coming from Senator Bernie Sanders, every time I hear him talking, he's talking about how Republicans are trying to cut Medicaid or whatever it is. What have the Republicans, what kind of commitments have the Republicans in the Senate, the Republicans in the House, or maybe the Republicans as a whole made towards potential cuts for Medicaid, Medicare, Social Security, these things that a lot of Americans rely on, very sensitive issues for people listening to this show right now? Where are the Republicans at on possible cutbacks that might occur with some of those different programs?
Right. So there are no official plans to touch Medicaid in this bill. Now, what Democrats keep pointing out is that there is $850 billion in cuts scheduled under the Energy and Commerce Committee in the House bill. That is the committee that funds Medicaid and a bunch of other health programs. So Democrats are arguing that there is no way you find $850 billion in cuts, especially when you're trying to get to $2 trillion in spending cuts, without touching those types of programs. Now, Republicans have pushed back on this. President Trump has said consistently, and some other Republicans too have said consistently, that they are not planning to touch Medicaid. They do not want to touch Medicaid in some of these programs, but some are a little more open to ideas like work requirements and also searching for Medicaid fraud. They think if they kind of zone in on those two things, they'd be able to make or maybe find some type of savings in there without touching the major programs that people rely on. But Democrats obviously are pushing back on that notion.
Ryan, this is Ryan Wiggins. When you say, I've heard many people say this before, that the Republicans are looking to make some of these, like the tax cuts, for instance, permanent. How does that work since this is a budget reconciliation bill? That seems like something that they would have to do separately from the bill. Is that right?
Right. So reconciliation pretty much allows them to pass a whole bunch of items without having to get 50 or 60 votes in the Senate. They can do this on a simple majority. So there's a lot of different items that they're going to probably try to put into this. Right. So you have the tax law side of things. You have the spending cuts. You've got the military and the border funding that's in there, too. And they also have energy policy they want to put in there, which hasn't really gotten a lot of attention. But that's probably one of the big other things that could go in there as well. So you would have to vote on, I think, all these things separately, and then they kind of combine it into one giant package and they pass it through the House and the Senate that way. So the kind of the disagreement when it comes to the taxes is, in the House Republican bill, I believe they extend it for another 10 years, whereas the Senate, they want to make it permanent so they don't have to come back and try to renew it every once in a while, which is what they're doing right now, essentially.
We're speaking with Ryan Schmelz. He's the Fox News Radio Capitol Hill and White House correspondent. You know, I don't know how much this hits the wings that you are walking through there on Capitol Hill, but the dust up, the confrontation, we're trying to think of the perfect word for what you would call what took place in the Oval Office between Trump and Zelensky on Friday. Does that reach into the halls of Congress, especially on the eve of a joint address to Congress that President Trump will be presenting tomorrow night?
So let's just put it this way. Last week, Annie, we had a question for Leader Jeffries, the top House Democrat. The question was, what is your relationship like with Speaker Johnson? His answer was, Rosa DeLauro and top House Democrats are working on negotiations to keep the government open. He flat out did not answer the question. So that kind of shows you the tension that's already in this building. And that was before what happened on Friday. So I think when we're heading into the State of the Union, we were already expecting a very testy room in there. I think this could only get worse after what you saw on Friday. I mean, you're seeing Democrats make the accusation this was a setup.
Yeah.
This was an ambush. I've heard some say they think that J.D. Vance went in there looking for blood because he has been somebody who's been probably one of the biggest Zelensky critics in all of Congress since his time there, if not the biggest Zelensky critic. So you hear a lot of different things like that. Obviously, see the Trump administration has pushed back on some of those notions, and they've made the claim that they were actually the ones who were taken aback by what happened in there. But this has definitely created a lot of drama here, and I don't think it's going anywhere anytime soon until this peace agreement potentially comes to fruition.
Well, Ryan, you know, when you're preparing for a joint address to Congress, there's kind of a pomp and circumstance about it. I love to watch it. I have to, like, mentally focus and prepare myself when I don't really love the guy or the girl who's in office. When it's my president that I voted for, I think, okay, let's go. Let's hear what he has to say. So, of course, it's a polarizing thing for American voters, taxpayers, and constituents to take in. But whenever Donald Trump is involved, there's always just a little extra spice in the mix. What are you hearing about what Democrats are preparing to do for this address tomorrow night? Will they show up? Are they going to protest? How are they going to present their side during that joint address in Congress tomorrow?
I haven't heard any major boycott efforts just yet. I think the big protest from Democrats is going to come from who their guests are, which is not shocking for any elected official of the opposite party to do. Right. A lot of Democrats are going to be bringing a lot of different workers who've been laid off within the federal government. You also have some others who might bring some maybe Ukrainian fighters or somebody who has ties to that conflict. So I think that's kind of where you're seeing the focus right now. And you might see people bring maybe DACA recipients or people who've been impacted by ICE raids. I think most of the protest, at least so far from what I'm hearing, is usually through the guests that they're bringing and not so much flat out walking out or just not being there. But could there be some other ideas that we see thrown out in the next 24 hours? I think it's certainly possible. But I think just everything's on the table at this point.
Yeah, it's got to be exciting, Ryan, for you to be. I don't know if that's the right word, but we know that keeping you on your toes, and we're grateful you give us some of your time to bring us up to speed. Thank you for being here, Ryan.
Hey, always great to be on, Annie. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Welcome back to the Annie Fry Show. We're going to waste absolutely zero time in getting to our next guest here, Senator Eric Schmidt, your senator and my adopted senator, back with us here on the Annie Fry Show. Thank you so much for the time today. It's a pleasure to have you back.
Sure thing. I'm glad. Listen, I'm so glad that you are a Missouri plus one. You're like the plus one for Missouri.
Man, Illinois is flirting with that no state income tax thing, and I'm like doing that side eye, that look over my shoulder meme, you know, that everybody sees. We got to ask you about the situation that took place between Zelensky and Trump in the Oval Office on Friday. I'm not even going to preface it with any sort of specific question. What happened?
Well, I posted about this on X. I was pretty animated about this because I just think it was a total disaster on Zelensky's part. He had been difficult. Look, President Trump ran on ending this war. I mean, look at some of the polling that's out. The American people do not want to get involved in this sort of entanglement. The American taxpayer is sort of tapped out here. So President Trump wants to bring peace. This is not something Biden wanted to do or was capable of doing. The only person in the world who can do this is President Trump. And so I actually went over to Munich a couple of weeks ago. I did not meet with Zelensky, but my message to our European allies was, it's time for you guys to pay up. We are tired of subsidizing your liberal social welfare governments for generations now. You need to start providing for your own defense. And interestingly, they sort of got it. Now, I don't know how they're going to get there, but they need to reinvigorate their industrial base. And we need to do some of that, too. But the point is, the partnership or the alliance is totally out of balance right now. So that was my message there. But as that was happening, you know, this minerals deal conversation sort of came up and had been moving forward now for a few weeks, and he had been difficult, and he's the one that wanted to come to the White House. He's the one that wanted to be there, and when he got there, he just showed a lot of ingratitude. He wanted to relitigate everything over and over. All the guy had to do literally was put a suit on or whatever, whatever you're wearing, sit there, smile, say thank you, have lunch, and sign the agreement. That's it. But he decided to hot dog it in there, and it was embarrassing for him. He was escorted out. He should have been. That is a pretty low bar, Annie, in that kind of an Oval Office room like that. It's basically, it's just for the cameras. Yeah. You know, you don't need to get into an argument with the president and the vice president. So he blew it. He missed the gimme putt, and I don't know where this goes now. I don't know that we can trust to work with him as a business partner in that sense anymore. So we'll see what happens, but it was a total debacle. President Trump is committed to bringing peace. We are not going to continue to fund an endless war with a blank check. So the time to come to the table is now. Trump's the only guy who can pull it off.
We're speaking with Senator Eric Schmidt. When Zelensky came in there and had that type of attitude, I just played a clip from an NBC report, I should say, in 2022, where it reported on Biden getting miffed at Zelensky for not being grateful on that phone call. And NBC, of course, reported on it like, oh, look at Joe Biden advocating for the American people. He wants to see some gratitude. Do you think that Zelensky came in with that attitude because he thought he was going to publicly win this argument with Donald Trump and still get what he wants? Or is what happened what Zelensky wanted?
Well, maybe. I mean, every room he walks into with a lot of these globalist types, he gets a standing ovation. And look, the Ukrainian people and him, to a large degree, have shown great courage, right? Like that, I'm not taking anything away from that. But there's no path. Like, part of the problem, there's no path to victory. No one can tell you what victory even looks like, right? And the old adage of that they've been using is someday it'll be your boys, and or you know, just give us another year and Russia will be on its knees. No one wants to hear that anymore. It is a stalemate. It's a meat grinder. It's a meat grinder. Hundreds of thousands of people have died. It's time for this thing to end. And I just think there's this sort of this misplaced Trump derangement syndrome happening, that the Democrats and so many on the left, they hate Trump so much that it clouds their view of, like, a president that wants to bring peace. Like, if this was a Democrat, Annie, they'd be already talking about him on his way to, you know, a Nobel Peace Prize. So it's just strange. I don't really completely understand it. But now the Democrats are the party of forever wars and censorship.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's kind of who they are. So it's weird.
It is super weird. It's weird to consume from here, being so far away from it. And your perspective, Senator Schmidt, on it is really, really valuable. You know, one of the things that has been underreported in my mind, and maybe I'm thinking too much about it, is one of the things Zelensky said is that to Trump and Vance and the whole, you know, Rubio's in there, this whole room full of people who are here to try to help bring peace to Ukraine. What you hear from Zelensky, he says, you know, you don't know because you have the benefit of an ocean, but you will know. What did that mean?
Well, I think that's one of the things that Trump took particular offense to. Was that a threat? Was that? But the reality is, again, he's relitigating for the cameras stuff that it kind of is what it is. I mean, we're at where we're at with this thing, and there needs to be diplomacy, right? There needs to be the what the Biden folks and kind of the, I would say, the Wilsonian establishment, and I'll explain what that means in just a second, they've had their run at this, and they've totally failed. Our post-Cold War foreign policy has been aimless, and then you see with the USAID scandal, all the stuff we're funding, like DEI around the world, has become totally corrupt. So what President Trump is doing, and J.D. Vance, I would include myself in this category, and I posted about this too to try to give more color to this from a 30,000-foot view, we can't be everywhere all at once all the time. We're not the global cops. This American realism is this idea that we are interested in core national interests of the United States of America. And what those are protecting the homeland and understanding that the 21st century is going to be defined by who wins this great powers competition between the United States of America and Communist China. That is how history will judge this entire century. So, in order for us to effectively do that, our European allies have to step up in a much more meaningful way. For example, if they contributed the same amount we do to defense, it would free up about $300 billion a year for us to go take care of the things that we need to take care of to keep our people safe. They refuse to do it. So President Trump's putting pressure on them to step up in a much more meaningful way. We'll see if they do it. The problem is, even if they wanted to, this deindustrialization that's happened in Europe and most recently in Germany doesn't even allow them, if they pump more money into it, to make the munitions necessary for this stuff. And we don't have the industrial base to be everywhere all at once all the time either, because you are making choices in a world of scarcity between building tanks for a land war in Europe or long-range fires in the Indo-Pacific. That's the truth. So the people need to just stop lying to everybody and pretend that we can be everywhere and we can do everything. We have to make decisions based on priorities that are American priorities. And so that's what President Trump's doing. And that's why these people are losing their, you know, that's why they're losing their minds.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
it's such a disruption to what people have been used to in this global order. And so that's what I support, is getting back to this place where we're standing up for America. And it doesn't mean we're not going to have allies. Of course we're going to have allies. But they need to do their fair share too.
Last question before we let you go. You can answer this as quickly as you like. Is there a possibility still that situations change and we are still able to complete that minerals deal? Or is that not in our interest?
Yes. I mean, I just think Zelensky needs to stop talking like a tough guy and get back to that. I don't know. I don't know that he can do it. I really don't know if he's in the position to do it. But if Ukraine has any chance of ending this war, they're going to have to sign a minerals deal. Because guess what? We should get our money back.
Mm.
And then we get Russia to the table. And then you negotiate this thing. And I don't even know if that'll happen for sure, Annie. But I know it's not going to happen unless, you know, whoever's leading Ukraine comes back to the table and signs that deal.
Yeah, it makes me wonder if Zelensky has any interest at all or benefit in not achieving peace, but I guess we'll have
to... An alternative theory is maybe that's actually... They don't want peace. Maybe they just want to keep going on. And I think that if that's the decision, I don't think that's going to be a good outcome for them.
Yep. And then there's no American interest in that because we're trying to achieve peace. And Donald Trump has been a great advocate for it. Senator Eric Schmidt, thank you for being with us here today. We always appreciate your time.
All right, Annie. Take care. Bye-bye.
Take care. You as well. Bye-bye. Gosh, I could talk to him for a long time. I just left like 7 really great questions on the table.
That's a real shame.
It is. He told me he had 7 minutes. I took like maybe 8.5. Sometimes, you know, they'll tell you like, oh, we got 7 minutes. They reached out to Brad. Brad was texting me and messaging me like crazy today to try to get the okay on that. Because we have Ryan Schmelz, who we just got done talking on Capitol Hill. We got Steve Moore at 105. We've got Will Chamberlain with the Article 3 Project. We don't usually do 4 guests. But what Brad was really worried about was bumping Wiggins America. He wanted my A-OK on it.
But he came into me real cavalier about it. Like, hey, we're just going to bump you.
I went the Zelensky route on him.
Did you say, get out of here?
I didn't appreciate that. I had my vice president, Mark Coxon, right next to me.
Oh, boy. Mark, send the text to Ryan Wiggins. I'm going to give you that cell phone.
I really hope he's not listening. That will come back.
I had my vice president, Mark Cox, with me right now.
He was ready to stand up for me. I said, hang on. Let's handle this diplomatically.
Well, you know, it's a monarchy in the Mark Cox world. I'm pretty sure you're the jester.
Yeah, I think so. I think you might be right. I didn't get a text yet, which means he was not listening.
You give him a little bit of time.
No.
It might be lengthy.
You know what? There's a what? A 3-second, 4-second delay? Oh, there it comes.
One of the questions that the threat. You don't understand what it's like because you have the benefit of an ocean, but you will understand. If he wouldn't have gone to the like you will understand part, you have the benefit of an ocean. Well, geography. High five. But you will understand? What the fudge brownies
that's
that
what I'm saying. Yeah, I was saying in the first segment that it's ridiculous that not just Zelensky, but everybody in the Western world is trying to bait America into thinking, well, you have a vested interest in your own national security. No, I'm not saying it's impossible that Russia gets out of hand. But you think Russia is going to attack the United States? I mean, they can't even handle Ukraine. They can't even beat them. Off my soapbox.
This is another thing I wanted to ask about, but it's just like a theory that I have. And as much as I would like to just toss, you know, bounce theories off of Eric Schmidt, he's got lots of better things to do. The joint address to Congress is tomorrow night. And I would say Trump is had an A+ first month. Can you score higher than A+? I don't know. I mean, polling is showing that moderates to some Democrats are even like, I'm not mad at what he's doing so far. It's going so well for Donald Trump. The way that the media and the Democrats have thrived is by creating gray area where when they all put their hands in the middle and agree on the scandal, they just run with it. There aren't facts that are involved. Well, we find them years later when people don't care and they've already prejudged Donald Trump for a bunch of bologna sausage that have been reported on the air for years and years. I think they needed a controversy. They need something that will cause a flare-up of emotions that exist when it comes to Donald Trump. Because they have too many people in their own camp who are like, this isn't really that bad. I thought this was the end of democracy, but it looks like we might be getting it back. I don't know. I want to see what happens here next. Maybe not saying it publicly, but they could certainly tell in their numbers, the polling numbers that people are reporting. So when you're paying attention to how the Democrats got it handed to them in November, watching Donald Trump make good on so many promises every day, just we can't even keep up with all of the things that he's reporting on or that he's doing. We can't report on it fast enough. They need a controversy. And when you put in to the equation, the Zelensky equation, this meeting with Senator Murphy, which I don't really know a whole lot about Senator Murphy, but everybody's talking about Senator Murphy and explaining how he's just like exactly what you expect from a Trump deranged, hating Democrat who's trying to make a name for themselves. You start to kind of understand a little bit more about why maybe if you can instigate some sort of controversy that exists between Zelensky and Trump, what is one of the things that people, if you go on social media, what is one of the things that indicates that you're a lefty? A Ukrainian flag. Mm-hmm. They're more unified. If you put an American flag in your profile, you are center to right. But if you want to indicate that you are left-leaning, you will have a Ukrainian flag. That's like a rallying point for the left. Weird. Super weird to me. Create a controversy that reminds people, oh, you've got to choose Trump or Zelensky. Who are you going to choose? Well, for people on the left who wake up in the morning trying to find another reason to fulfill their hatred for Donald Trump, was Zelensky encouraged to do that? Was he encouraged to just kind of, oh, trip over the rug and dump some salt in an open wound for Donald Trump? Donald Trump's open wound is the American taxpayer who is sick and tired of shoveling, I don't know what, pallets? Or buckets of cash over to other countries who don't have our best interest at heart. Then you get a controversy the weekend before the joint address, and maybe you put the paddles on the Democratic Party and get a little bit of that fervor back. Maybe. That's a theory I have. Steve Moore, Will Chamberlain, 1 o'clock hour.